Hello, and welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters have been doing this for way too long. Talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in. Yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in. Condition, yes.
That's a good time.
I will give you guys, I'll give you DM inspiration. I don't really have any money in my wallet. I'll give you DM inspiration for the next game if somebody can name me who did that tune. No? No?
Oh, Jesus. Nah. I should know this too.
Boom. Kenny Rogers with First Edition, his first hit ever. Yeah. I just dropped in to see what... And it's all... It's crazy, dude, because it's not even like country. It's like this weird, like, funky, psychedelic thing that Kenny was doing before
what
he became a gambler.
That?
Yeah. First Edition, I'm going to say late 70s. I'm going to say probably late 70s, yeah. There's a whole record. It's okay.
Yeah, record, exactly.
It's okay. Well, I mean, I had the CD, so, I mean, you know, they redo them. I mean, new albums coming out are records again, so, you know, these days. It's like wine. You can't tell just because it has a screw top. It can still be really good wine these days, you know, because the technology has improved on screw tops. Anyway.
Would you like to smell the caps, sir?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, hey,
my Italian ancestors are rolling over in a grave.
Hello again. This is Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave. Welcome back to another episode of Three Wise DMs. So, just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in because, as you guys have seen on the website, threewisedms.com, please go give us some traffic over there. But also on our socials, we have some our last two articles we did, the Forged in Fire series, which I think might actually turn into a series because it's super fun. DM Chris, you were showing people how you had kind of made your demonic Bob Ross for Tony's birthday game. And then also the newest one, your idea of the Nazgul. And you had mentioned to us, you know, how so many of the creatures in the Monster Manuals and third-party publications are Tome of Beasts and everything, have all these resistances and immunities to conditions that, like, we never even use, right? So that's kind of what we're going to talk about. We're going to go into conditions today and see, like, how are we using them? How are we not using them? And how can you better use them in your game? So I'm going to throw it out to you guys.
Well, you know, one of my criticisms was when I bitched about Stun, you know, 150 episodes ago, is like virtually creatures have any immunity to this. And then I guess they listened to us and they're like, oh crap, yeah. But
wait, there's nobody has immunity to Stun now.
Tiamat does.
Well, that's
okay. I know, but I
that's ultimate legendary resistance, right? Yeah, but
right.
Sorry,
no, like
I stunned Tiamat.
I'm sure
well, no, that does go to Tony's original point 4 years ago, which was, can I stun Unicron, you know? So anyway. You know.
If it's not listed, apparently, yes, you can. You hit him right in the circuit breaker. He's like,
yes.
Oh,
my
destiny! He's staggering around on Cyclotron stun.
Yeah, the spark.
You know, as the Autobots are flying out of his eye. Okay, I'm done. When you're running a game, you want to have this game be challenging, but not loaded with all these gotcha moments. So the conditions we're talking about can really go either way. They're fantastic if you have a party that you can't control, they're just too badass, and you can't rein them in, and they're just kicking down every door, you know, unchallenged and wasting all your opponents. Or, you know, there could be situations where you could dial up the danger too high unintentionally, and it's like, great, I'm going to walk in this door, and we're all going to be blinded, deafened, and restrained. Isn't that exciting? Yeah, especially because the 5e mechanics are pretty unforgiving if they target one of your saves you don't have proficiency in.
But, I mean, to your point earlier, Dave, too, there's a lot of conditions in there, even in just the basic conditions from the player's handbook, you know, stuff like that. Maybe it's just us, but we don't really use very often, right? I mean, stunned obviously happens and everybody's like, oh, Christ, right? That's a pretty low-hanging one there. But to your point, blinded, deafened, incapacitated, which really is a, like a sub one of like, you know, paralyzed or petrified. But obviously those ones are extremely dangerous, to Tony's point, where if I make you paralyzed, well, I mean, goodbye, but it's there's so many that you can add that could make it a little bit different. It's not hit points that you're losing. It's like in Gloomhaven, that was a big part of what made Gloomhaven cool, is that you would apply conditions to the party sort of ahead of time and during the game. And so that was a lot of the thing. It wasn't necessarily the hit points, because you're only losing one or two. It was finding ways to work around someone being blinded or deafened. Oh, deafened really is like, I don't know how many ability checks require hearing. I guess perception, right? Besides that, I don't know what other ones. I mean, you could persuade somebody and not hear what they have to say. So I don't know what ability check really, that one really restricts, but as or far as just, the rest of them.
All of a sudden you can't control the volume of your voice and you're just yelling at everybody all the time.
You need one of those in there too.
Where is the town hall?
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. There's not a ton. I have only recently, to tell you that I think recently really started to look at how those conditions might affect the battlefield. Whereas a lot more of it is just as I'm running the combat and I see the monster stat block and I go, oh, okay, I need you to make me a strength save. I need you to make me a dex save, a con save, whatever, to be restrained or knocked prone or grappled or swallowed, whatever it might be. But I've only really started to play with them. And to tell you the truth, it was when we ran your birthday game, Chris, the 12-person game that we did an article and an episode about, just because it was such a huge undertaking. But when I did Dragansalor's Lair, I saw the power of like some really simple things that weren't necessarily like – some of it was conditions, other ones were not. But like the power of using the silence spell – and darkness, magical darkness, to a party, because they then can't silence. Your spellcasters are gone for all their verbal components, which I hadn't really thought of. But they can't speak, so they can't cast. And darkness, the blinded condition, surprisingly, even at a high level, was incredibly effective, because once you impose disadvantage on the roll, and that's kind of was my big thing going into this episode, is using disadvantage as another condition, one that you can, in essence, use discretionally as the DM, right? But imposing advantage or disadvantage is surprisingly powerful, as you guys remember when you first came upon your first true dragon of Kryn in the Dragonlance game, Akaviri, at Camp Carrion Clay. And this was actually in the mod, which was one of the things that made me go, oh, that's a great idea. You've never seen a dragon, this thing would be incredibly frightful. Then the frightful presence, you had disadvantage on the roll, right? So, and that made sense, and I started to kind of play with that more.
Well, the incapacitated is like the foundation, a lot of the really nasty status attacks, so to speak, right? Like when you look at stun, it's like C incapacitated. You want to look at paralyzed, it's like C incapacitated. But like, I have to give 5e some credit with this. Because when you get stunned, there's an often, except for like the monk stun, there's ways to end this even in that round where it's not really going on for rounds. Like, but we're playing Marvel. You blow an endurance check, you could be stunned for 7 rounds with the right hit. And that's like really horrendous. But with other conditions, it really depends like how – like you have all these nasty tools in your toolbox that sometimes go unused. And these are in there. Like for example, in the Marvel game at one point – Chris had rolled out an opponent. We weren't sure who she was at the time, but she was actually Cersei, the goddess of magic. And he had kind of mentioned to me after the game, he's like, you know what I should have done? I should have mind-controlled Felix. And I'm like, well, that would have been a TPK, because I would have murdered all of my friends. Wasn't that fun?
No dark episode.
There's no – other than maybe – the void might have been able to like put you into like another dimension where you would then kill everyone there too. So I don't know. Maybe that would have broken the spell. I don't know.
Yeah, I wake up with all these dead bodies here. I'm like, no, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, if people think mind controlling or charming the barbarian in the party is frightening for the rest of the party, imagine, take a god and mind control them.
Well, like they did a good job with that too, because in the earlier systems, and I don't mean to simp for 5e, but and also I kind of glanced back at the 2e charm person spell. If you had a 14 intelligence and you blew your initial save, you could be under those effects for up to 2 weeks.
Man, oh, we did charm. This. I talked about this when we went over the OSR game where like charm person, like these are like first level clerics or cult members, like, and they charmed kind of you
at that point.
It was like, oh yeah, you're now charmed for, you know, 12 rounds. And you know, wait, what? You know, where's my save? Yeah, no save. Sorry. Savers suck.
Yeah. Like and like other not high level spells like hold person. So, you know, the ninth level fighter comes charging up to the spellcaster. Well, what's your wisdom save? Plus zero? You probably don't have a wisdom bonus. You probably don't have wisdom prof. So you're going to roll a 16. So what do you got, a 20% chance of resisting that? And then you being damaged doesn't break that spell. Damaging them might. They could blow their concentration, but they've got you tagged and bagged. You're done.
Yeah. No, I think that they're really cool ways to control combat that don't necessarily have to immediately be hit points. It's not like, oh, the dragon breathe fire on you and take 110 hit points, right? It's all of a sudden the dragon did it, to your point. It's like frightful presence, and now the battlefield changes a little bit. Someone's stunned or something like that, right? It changes the battlefield. The hold person, which is like the crit fisher's heaven, right, is like, boop, somebody casts hold person, and everybody runs in really quick and whacks on the guy until he falls over. We started doing that in Curse of Strahd a little bit at times. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, when
definitely.
Phineas got the hold person and hold monster spells, but they're a ways they can lead to hit point things, but there are ways to flavor it and change the things. To your point, Dave, like the disadvantage, there's ways to change the battlefield so that it's not, you know, I don't necessarily have to put terrain there. All of a sudden, maybe you're deafened or blinded by what's happening, and now everyone has to kind of figure their way out through this, and it makes it a little bit more interesting than just everybody lines up like the, you know, the British and the American soldiers in like the Revolution, right, and just keeps firing, and like the next line comes up and climbs over these guys and starts firing, you know.
That's how it happens.
It's a little bit more it's a little bit more guerrilla like, you know, how they started moving warfare too.
One of the things that we keep talking about, imposing conditions as opposed to hit points, like you were just saying, Chris, and that makes me think of when we played the Avatar RPG, the Magpie system. And that's one of the things that I really dug about it, and something that's kind of what you're explaining in 5e or other systems is the ability to impose conditions that have effects. And it's not, oh, I'm hurt by 20, you know, and I have 100 things, so I have 20 less apples. But it's, well, now I have to run away. Now I'm frightened. Like in the last Dragonlance game was a great example because, one, I realized for some reason just now, but I realized like how ridiculously powered the paladin really is in 5e.
So
you know,
in every game.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's crazy, you know, but that's funny because you don't always see it in the same way, but just the way that those encounters were built, you know, and then I ran them, I just saw that. But the stun thing, Tony, you are correct. It is wildly powerful. And I still stand by my statement from 4 years ago when Thor and I both said, well, no, there are ways around it, because there are ways around it. Because, again, as much as I say I don't do it, there are times where it happens where I have solo encounter. I have a party of five against one thing. Now, that one thing is dangerously powerful. You know, like when you guys rolled into one, the dragon. So this is in the last DL game for everybody that's been kind of following. They just kind of got to the entrance to the City of Lost Names. And I ran the encounter for the most part, the whole path, generally by the book. I adjusted some things, especially lore wise and stuff. And the one thing I did, I changed the one golem that they run into something from the Tome of Beasts 2, which was the dragon flesh golem, which I was like, oh, this is like literally like, why isn't this in the mod? This makes so much more sense. They're over a dragon graveyard, dragon flesh golem, ba-boom, right? So we're talking about a CR10 golem. They then run into four bone nagas, which is, again, that's, you know, for a party five. And then they ran into a green slod. So those are some pretty hefty encounters. So I was like, I'm okay with having this solo boss in it. They weren't bosses, but the solo, you know, creature. But you do realize that the minute that the monk is able to hit that stun because they don't have enough of a wisdom save or a con save. They don't have resistance to that because it's not magical. They don't have these things, that's really easy to fail, especially at those levels, because their bonuses aren't to the level of an ancient black dragon, right, that you're trying to knock prone. And then the divine smites and the hitting and all of these things just unleashes this torrent. But again, you put multiple creatures in, I still stick by my thing. There are a lot of ways that goes, that you think stun is as powerful as it is, except in certain sitches. There's my dissertation on that.
Well, you know, there are many ways that your boss can hypothetically protect it from stun. You know, like the legendary resistances, the high con save. Certainly not baked into their immunities, because WotC didn't do that. But but what Dave experienced in that game was another angle of my original point, where he's going to have a stunned monster in every single freaking encounter up until the boss. So, yeah. No, we did not stun the boss, but he's like, here's a CR10. And then the monk throws a body blow. He's stunned. It's like, and guess what? I'm unloading the big smite. There's level three smite. There's the precise strength stacked on top of that. All the shenanigans. And, you know, you're like, did you do like 49 damage with a sword? I'm like, I'm sorry.
And even when I have imposed conditions on the other players, so like, Chris, Rasguedo, and Mikros, Bonnie's character, were both Brighton, so they had to run away. No big deal, because they have a lot of range stuff, and they would prefer to be at range. So you just you help them out with that one. And then the monk, generally, because they're so dexterous, is gonna be pretty high on initiative. So yeah, it kind of sets it up. So you do have to take that into consideration with Sun. So with that, what would you like? Just let's start there, because stunned, I think, is probably the bane of most DMs at their table, right? It's the one that people talk about the most, and the monks stun, and the way the stun, they're so powerful and all of this stuff. What would you do? How would you want to change it at your table if you were going to, like, and not mid game where all of a sudden, no, your stun doesn't work? What would you do?
Well, I think if you look at it, and I mean, even though we talk about it, all right, the paladin is incredibly powerful. Yes, but he is incredibly powerful offensively. So, like, in the Curse of Strahd game, for example, it was like, you know, the paladin was super offensive, but I could get knocked down. Tony wouldn't necessarily do as much damage, but you couldn't knock him down. So he had power. The barbarian takes that part. The monk takes the stunning part, right? The rogue gets sneak attack. Like, I think they're all parts that help the players achieve what they want their characters to do. So it's more like, instead of changing them, it's adding stuff to the encounters, to your point, multiple creatures, putting stun back on the players, right? Having creatures there that can stun. It could go both ways. As long as the condition goes both ways, then it just becomes another thing that affects the battlefield. If the creature can stun people and it stuns somebody, it stuns the monk ahead of time, right? That's an advantage for the DM side of the combat, right? And it adds some flavor. It can be, you know, it can certainly be disheartening as a player to be stunned or something like that. But in the same point, it's kind of part of the thing, and it makes it fun. And you have to figure out ways, and your teammates have to figure out ways to get around it. But I think instead of fixing them, I think it's more just preparing encounters that, like, I look at what I have there. I know if I have a monk and a paladin in the party, I know what their general strategy is going to be. So I have to make sure that the times that I really want to challenge them, that I'm making sure that it cuts both ways.
Chris, I think that's actually really quick before Tony jumps in here. That's a great perspective, I think, because we oftentimes talk about how would we change these things because they are, quote, OP, quote, broken, quote, game break, whatever it might be. And it could be, right? There are certain things that you go, wow, that's really, really powerful. But you kind of are coming at it, and you're kind of saying the way like the NFL, right? You have this new rookie QB that comes out, or whoever, or running back or somebody, and they're crushing it because they're brand new, because they're running in routes that maybe they haven't seen. They have certain skill sets that they haven't. Okay, we're not. But the minute they have tape, and they come back next season, oh yeah, no, we took that away from you. Never mind, right? And that's kind of, if I'm not mistaken, that's kind of the perspective you're looking at, is that don't look at how do I change these things, but how do I remove, how do I take away your best asset, but still within the ton of bounded rules that are well, that are active
in the context in of a having system. Fun, right? In the context of having a fun, challenging combat game.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would recommend a counter strategy if one player is really pulling something apart. Because, no, you don't want to, and I said this back in episode one, you don't want to have this big boss you've been building up to for the last, you're teasing out for 5-6 episodes. You get to the session and he's like, rah! And you're like, he's stunned and everybody beats the crap out of him, steel chairs, you know, they shave his head and throw him off a cliff and it's done. Like, that's horrible. It's like, great. Wasn't that climatic, guys? Didn't you love that? And everybody loves these sun conditions because they give you that power. They give you that gotcha moment on the boss because the players are looking for their cool moment, which is cool. Players don't like it done to them generally. I mean, it depends what it is. Like, there's been certain games.
Yeah.
Right, Dave? I was in a game we were playing in. We were both players. And the turns were so long that if you stunned me – and I had to skip a turn. I've been out of the action for like 50 minutes.
Yeah, guys, anybody want anything from Taco Bell? I'm not going to order. I'm actually going to go there. It's 10 minutes away. I'll be back before you even attack me because the DM's turn is still 45 minutes away. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, Tone.
But, you know,
definitely in situations like that, it can affect it. Yeah.
Yeah, that comes – and I think, Tony, we talked about this because we talked about it in the Unicron episode. And again, guys, I'm going to actually – I'm going to link to the episode we talked about it in 4 years ago and the article that I actually wrote about stuns and all of this and the rule of cool, kind of going into this. Because a lot of my points still, I think, stand, and I still stand by them. Because we're talking about this. Tony, that actually came a lot from, like, your – what do you, I don't want to say hatred.
Your dislike is
all from your 4E experience, right?
Worse
because
than
of
that.
The level of stun abilities and powers that were rampant in that system.
We were abusing the shit out of this back in first edition. With my hammer of thunderbolts, I stunned Orcus. I mean, like, you know, just Tiamat was stunnable in first edition.
Right.
Like, really, it was preposterous. It's like there is a condition, and you're going to walk into it, and that's how it works. And there was no workaround for that. So I guess rather than changing the rules, I would just consider it as a DM how sparingly I want to use this so that I'm not going to slog my own combat.
And I will say, this is going to be a little bit of a tangent, and then I kind of want to go forward with something else. But a little bit of a tangent. So a lot of what I've been talking about tonight has been regarding the recent Shadow of the Dragon Queen episode that we have. And a difference here, and I think this is important because, Tony, you made the point just earlier that you don't want to tease out this villain, right? So I've been teasing out people like Loazette and Balafion, right? The voice of Takesis and Casaldi Fireeyes and all these, you know, the real big bads, right? Strahd, Vampyr, whatever. That's where you don't want these things to, you have to really look at. And oftentimes those types of NPCs and creatures and monsters have inherent legendary resistances, you know, advantage with saves, things of this nature, right? That allow them to be more of a threat. But I think with the recent game, I didn't mind how it actually went out. I think what it was is, and we've all been there where you're looking at a session that's coming up, right? Like, you guys are coming into the Path of Memories. It's the first City of Lost Names. You've been traveling through the Northern Waste. You get to this thing that's supposed to be this, okay. And I'm looking at this row of encounters, right? This, and I'm going, oh man, this is a session, you know, and you're adjusting. You're like, well, I'm going to make this a little more powerful. I'm going to dial this one back. You know, you're trying to make it challenging without just like, okay, all the dragons attack and rocks fall and fuck you, right? Like,
the dragons rush
over.
Yeah, because I mean, we're another tangent. I think we're gonna have to do an episode once about tough guy DMs. You know, telephone tough guy DMs on the socials who are like, I'll kill everybody. I'm like, does anyone show up for your game? But regardless, But I think an important part, so the big bad is one thing, but this type of encounter, I think what I was running into, because I've run into it before and I generally modulate, this time I was like, oh, because it's that expectation of this challenge, and then the players meet that and go, yeah, dude, we met that. And not that it wasn't a challenge, right? But that you feel this like, oh, it wasn't really like, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, because you're not in the moment of the game in the same way. Does that make sense? I know this is a little bit of a tangent, yeah, but it's like my own condition. It's a DM condition has been applied. You know?
Dude, regularly in the further game, I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't know about this. Like, I think this is going to get them right. Like that
it's
one,
TPK.
Like I said, it's the Fantastic TPK, Players book, the encounters sometimes are, they really kind of push it. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen here. And there are times it does, and there are times it doesn't. I think a little bit is the, you know, the roll of the dice, but it is, it's funny. A lot of times it's numbers and it's the strategies, it's the stuns. If I'm rolling out one guy in there, one or two guys against four or five people, like they're all just going to gang up on them, right? Like it's those encounters, like if singular things, it's always a bit of a struggle. It doesn't matter what their CR is. I remember in the freaking Tomb of Annihilation, you guys just snuck the freaking the Lich Lady there, and it was on, right? And it was either I would kill everybody, kind of to your point earlier, or, all right, she's off now, and she'll, like, regenerate later from her phylactery. But she was like a CR 21, right? But the right combination of debilitating conditions, right, and the amount of people, it was five against five or six against one. Like, it makes it that she can only go so many times. She didn't even have the legendary action, so she wasn't like she could even be going in between turns. So it CR 21 doesn't mean as much then, right? Like, it's really about the amount of players versus the amount of players a lot of times.
I guess it really sets it. Like, Chris, you absolutely, like, with that character, like, we talked about that. And, like, you know, all, like, after the game, we kind of, like, was that right? Should I have used the finger of death? And I'm like, well, it depends. Now that we're nine sessions in this random situation where there's this person who invited us up into their lair, and we're conversing with them.
Into their floating lair. Yeah, let's come right up.
Yeah, we did, and we're talking with them and with her, and the cleric's like, she's undead, and he wigged. There was no discussion. Like, he went all in, like, pushed all his chips right into the table. So at that point, it was on. There was no way to roll this back for me, for you. And the question is, like, as for a DM, like, is that a point where you just, like, am I going to snuff him out? Because I hit him with one of those not the power word kill, you're done. You're absolutely
that
done.
Was the, that yeah, was
there, are, there is no coming back. Yeah. Especially with the soul curse, the death curse that's inherent in Tomb of Annihilation too, right?
It's there's something to it, and it's like there has to be a level of danger. But I mean, in many ways, I didn't really prepare her with the idea. Like I was, you know,
going
I still was
fight.
On my mind that this is the way it's going to go, right? Like I still hadn't fully like developed the experience of like, yeah, no, this is not how it's going to go. So in my mind, it was never going to be a combat encounter. I never thought of it that way. I hadn't prepared it, right? It was like
Chris, same,
and
yeah,
then
same
when it was like she's undead, bam, and I'm like,
in
oh,
Curse
well,
of Strahd, yeah. Right? In Curse of Strahd, when you guys had restored the memories of Exathanter, the Lich,
that was not
I realized that, you know, the players like kind of went with it in the sense of like, this guy's way too powerful. I don't want just want to like try to take him on, right? Because it would have gone poorly. But I kind of was going in with that expectation that no, they're not going to try to fight. And you guys didn't, because you were like, we can essence use these factions against each other. This guy doesn't seem to be like in with Strahd right now. So my friend of my enemy. All right. So anyway, but yeah, that's like the DM condition. I feel like it gets inflicted on DMs sometimes. Right.
Yeah. I think this needs to be, I hate to say this. This is kind of like something you wanted to talk about before we say, you know, how hard you're going to roll out like in session zero, like, and it's difficult to get the players to commit to this, but like, where do you want the difficulty to be? Is this really a game where we want to run this like Call of Cthulhu, where you could walk in the basement and die falling down the stairs? Because we've all done that, right? Or do you want something that, like, honestly, Dave, to your credit, your Call of Cthulhu or your Dragonlance campaign.
One day. One day I will run a Call of Cthulhu session.
Luke's going to run Palladium for us. He's going to run Rifts. But your difficulty, I think, is right where it needs to be. It's challenging.
No, yeah. I'm thinking about it as we go forward. Because, as with anything, you start to see a lot of people running these adventures. You know, like there's... I mean, God, there are literally libraries of materials for Curse of Strahd, right? There's whole people have made their whole careers off, here's how you can mod this out, and some really great stuff, right? But it's because they start to run into things and go, okay, I ran into this, take a look, you know? And people have said this before, you know, people are starting to say, hey, does the City of Lost Names, does it feel as dangerous? So I'm definitely, like, taking a look, because you want it to feel as the adventure bubbles more and more and gets to that boil, you want it to feel that way. And that does, as we've talked about, get hard when players become, you know, past that level 5 and going forward. It is a really, it's this weird Thorin used to talk about. It's this weird point. It's this, like, this empty space in the game where a ton of creatures in the Monster Manual are now useless. Because, not useless, but, like, they're not, like, oh, I don't want to play with them because their saves are too damn easy, right? And then that's one of the things I wanted to go after with conditions. Like, sometimes the save is, it's too goddamn easy. Yeah, and that's DC where, like,
or something like that.
Yeah. Right, DC 11, like, good luck failing that. Now, in the girls game, be assured that they will fail every fucking save I throw at them. Oh, my God. You should have seen another condition that we could talk about, but the exhaustion levels. I mean, Bonnie's character in that game almost died because she just kept taking exhaustion levels. And, like, you can only clear out, like, I think with a long rest. So you don't even get back to zero, right? But, like, be assured there are tables where none of this is going to matter because your players are all failing their saves. They're all missing with their stunning strike, right? You know, so this might not apply to you. But this idea of keeping a level of this challenge together, but you never know how that session's going to go. Because when your guys' dice go cold, they go cold. But I just hearken back to that idea of when we first started the campaign, that level of danger that feels inherent because you're so low level, and modulating that because you want to feel powerful. I like when you guys come in and you're able to take out the golem, like, cool, right? But at the same point, it's that weird imposter syndrome, right? Where is it challenging enough? Is it trying to constantly read that table. Does that make sense? Not to get into this is condition of psychological conditions on the DM, but
that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, at that point in your story, I mean, mechanics aside, right? So, like, for example, like in Chris's game, like, you know, we're level 8 now, and in Dave's game, we're level 9. We're heroes. I mean, are we we're not masters of the universe, but we're all established heroes. And if Sir William walked into a random encounter and got thrashed, I don't know, like, how that would play the story, other than he'd be like, well, so I just got my ass kicked going to the kitchen. Do we really want to confront the boss?
Tony, it's funny. You're heroes of the realm, right, in a way. So it's like I'm thinking, because now you guys in the Beacon's Bold are generals, right? And I refer to you as a general. It's cool. And it makes me think this is yet again another Jedi thing. But
yes, this is Star Wars.
But what happens, right? New Hope, right? You got, like, Luke's a farmer. Han's just some smuggler, right? Nothing. All of a sudden, Return of the Jedi, General Solo, do you have your strike team? Like, what if Han went down to Endor and, like, he has a challenge, but he can't get it done? Like, that's a shit movie.
It's a little bit of the Peter principle, right?
The guy, the shield's still up. And you're all dead.
Well, but I mean, like, but just calling him general, like, he was a smuggler. Like, he has no concept of starship tactics. They're like, all right, General Solo. And they're like, they're flying the wrong way or something
No, I deny you, sir. I deny you.
Yeah, he got promoted past his competence.
Well, no, he was in the Empire. He was in the Corellian Navy or something, wasn't he originally?
I don't know. That's some deep lore.
No, like, that's actually expanded universe stuff. Like, he was, like, a level. But whatever. Regardless, right? Lando is the one that he doesn't know fuck all. Why are we giving him the Falcon to lead the whole fleet? But that's another episode. That's another episode where we destroy all your childhood dreams.
And he was too goddamn cool. That's why.
When he's not the mayor of Gotham.
Guys, remember when you loved this in childhood? Let's destroy it for you. Anyway, but.
But no, I think to your earlier point, like, you know, I think if the first level in D&D, first couple levels are very threatening. They're very, like, it's easy to be, like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, low hit points, anything could happen. But I think if there's a period there where it does change and it becomes more heroic, right? There's a point at which you're not going to have the same level of challenge or things like that. I think people still get knocked down. Like, people will still be knocked down in the Dragonlance campaign on the way out.
Oh, no doubt.
But it's
no doubt
that other people will be there to help get them up and stuff like that. And but worse things could happen. But I think if you're looking for that, it's tough to do that with a system that levels the way that D&D does, because eventually you reach a point where you're trying to be more powerful, right? Like, that's, you know, if you like that, Call of Cthulhu is a good one, because you don't level the same way. It's very short. You're not gaining these magical abilities as you do things. You might gain a couple points here or a couple points there in one of your skills, but there's not the same thing. So every time you go out, I have these 12 hit points. And God forbid I take like 6 hit points of damage, because then I have a serious injury and I have to roll immediately, or I'm going to drop unconscious, and then I could literally die right there. You know, like, it's much different than if I'm, you know, 5 sessions in D&D, all of a sudden I'm maybe second, third level. I have a decent store of hit points. I have spells or potions that could help me maintain that. It's harder and harder as you continue to accrue stuff like hit points and abilities to make it challenging. Making it fun, I think, is really thing. And there is a level of challenge to it, but D&D is more towards reliving heroic adventures than challenging something like Call of Cthulhu or one of the more grindy, you know, style games.
Oh, Chris, I would agree with that. I think that's I'm going to use another damn Star Wars reference. I don't know what it is. Oh, yeah. I got to go watch it. I got to go watch it right now. But no, in imagine here. So, you know, when you get up to a levels, once you're 9, 10 and above, Chris, as you said, it is no longer dungeon delving and gritty OSR. It's heroic fantasy role playing, and you need to adjust for that, right? So there's a couple points in Mandalorian, right? The episode where he has Grogu and Luke shows up. Luke annihilates these things in such an amazing heroic, you want to see it this way type of encounter. Like, what if he didn't? Like, what if all of a sudden these things just like pounce on him and just start beating him because he failed his save? Not very heroic, right? Like Mike Shanks.
The chosen one right there.
Yeah, always be the, you know, be the fan of the players. You're like, you're watching this season and you want it to be good. So what this is making me think of with the conditions is, especially in the low levels, and I think this kind of plays out with a lot of the way that some of the monsters are built. A lot of the monsters early on don't inflict a lot of conditions, right? But later on, those are ways that beyond just I need to punch you, you punch me, the story of D&D, right, is the inflicting of conditions and the changing of the battlefield that then makes the players have to reach down beyond just their big, heavy hits and start to play with it, you know? Because I remember in Curse of Strahd and when I was running the Rime of the Frostmaiden for the girls, when you go up against a ghast or a ghoul, I can't remember. What's the one that paralyzes you?
Ghouls.
Yeah. Good luck with that, because I dropped almost the entire party in Curse of Strahd because that DC is kind of high at second level. At 10th level, fuck you. I'll take an army of these things, right? But second level, cool. This is the Death House, right? Or in literally, it's just session zero, one encounter just to have them do something, and I drop almost the whole party in the Rime of the Frostmaiden. Like, that is a way to do it, and if you love playing it that way and you love as a player play it, cool. I don't necessarily want to play it that way all the time. I don't know, you know, so yeah, right.
So these mechanics allow our players to navigate through the story that we're telling, and, you know, like we're talking about exhaustion, I think that's a pretty neat way to express that your character's in peril without necessarily killing them off. You get in your third layer of exhaustion, you're at half hit points. That mechanically and cinematically is a big deal. You're like, you're at half hit points, buddy. How you feeling? And like that's where you're gonna be. Handle that right now. But yeah, like
oh, a ghoul. No, you're not just at half your max. You also have disadvantage on attacks and saves. Your speed is halved, and all your ability checks and skills are now at disadvantage too. It is crushingly crushing.
And it can
that's how crushing it is. It's crushingly crushing.
At that point, yeah. That's pretty much the only way to get around it is to lay down. But I think exhaustion is something that isn't really used often. I think you get it sometimes, especially related to like cold environments, right? That's where I've seen it the most is you gain levels
coming
of exhaustion.
Coming up in Ragnarok, surely.
Yeah, extremes, yeah. Extremes what, of temperature. Tomb of Annihilation.
Yeah, like the extremes of temperature, stuff like that. But it's, I think those ones, I you know, a lot of the others, I think that's a very cool one to your point, Tony, to introduce because it's, not like stunned, right? Like it's not like bump and now like well just good luck, you're screwed. It's like I've given you a condition, but I'm like you just have to work your way out of it. Like you're gonna have to rest at some point and something like that. Like there's a things I know before I go in whether I'm gonna take another level of exhaustion. If I take a level of exhaustion walking through the snowy tundra, well, I either gotta find shelter or I could keep on going and possibly take another level of exhaustion. Like there's a level of, there's a level of player agency in that I'm going to exhaust myself further versus something like where somebody runs out and boom, you're stunned. And then the rest of his buddies run out and whack on you and, you know, until you're unconscious, your speed is reduced to zero.
Yeah. I just pulled up a cool stats and I could see why. It gave him a hard time. Oh, its AC is low. Its hit points for that for a CR1 is pretty high, honestly. And yeah, CR10 Constitution saving throw. But if they bomb it, they're paralyzed for a minute. And in combat, that might good as luck. Well be
they're,
an hour and a half.
Still done.
So yeah, I think like that type of thing. Like you know, in the early times, like conditions, you could definitely use them to create a very scary environment, like, you know, especially, you know, gritty or horror based or something like that conditions early on. Later on, though, I think conditions can definitely, like I said, become a way in which you are taxing. Chris, you were just talking about extremes of weather, whatever. But I either have to find shelter, right? And let's say it's extremes of weather. I have to find shelter or I can push on or I have to be this super powerful hero and I have the ability to get rid of these things, but it costs us, right? It costs us a greater restoration. It costs us this. It costs us and burning those, right? We're always talking about it's resource management. And that's one of the things in the recent Dragonlance session that I was like, they're going to be burned. And it did. By the last encounter, William had no smites left. He burned through every single one because you have finite resources. And if you can't long rest because you're like, this is not a place to long rest, you know, because things are probably going to happen. You're burning through this stuff. So they're powerful until they're not. And the gas tank is empty.
Yeah, controlling long rests and short rests is a great way to take advantage of that is that,
that
too
is
many long rests can absolutely
itself,
turn
right?
any party into a a super powerful force there. It's like making sure that you know that, hey, you're not going to get all of your spell slots back in 5 minutes. Like, so you better not, you know, you better use some cantrips in there as well and stuff like that. You
that
better manage
a,
your resources a little.
That is a condition in and of itself, Tony, like in the, I remember the Storm King's Thunder campaign. Still one of the best sessions in any campaign that we've had, in my opinion, especially because we were online virtual for the whole damn thing. But it was when we invaded the Steading of the Hill Giant Chief, their version of that, at least, in Storm King's Thunder, right? Because it's an update of against the Giants.
I played that on the table. Like, that
exactly.
was that fucking nuts.
And the only way that we got through that is because of your insane idea of the time tent thing, right? Where we literally could, like, pop out. Get a long rest mechanic and pop back in because if we didn't, the Hill Giants were going to annihilate us. There is no way out of that situation. It's still one of the best because just the tension and the just the you. I mean, it was we were just pushing and we were wailing through stuff, but we were taxing our resources. So yeah, it was. But that is a condition in and of itself is really you know. Limiting shorts and longs and things like that when you can't always, right? You can't always, but there are times where you set up the clock or you set up the mechanics like Chris in Tomb, where you were like, there is no long rest until you get to an area where you can long rest. So it's constant resource management, which can go either way, but it is a way to really make your your encounters really start to pop.
It's hard to have a good relaxing rest when you're in the middle of the jungle and you don't know what the hell's happening, right? You're waking up every 5 minutes, the ground is hard, there's a root there, snake just goes slithering by your head. You know, same thing for out in the thing. So
there's not that T-Rex.
It's a good mechanic, but to your point, it's something that you have to use to add the fun, but be careful because you get player mutinies where people are like things. We ended up starting to use like the campfire mechanic and other ways to get so that you could replenish some level of your spell slots or other resources during a short rest, just not get the full,
which
you
I
know,
thought was
8 hour effect.
Yeah, so. I thought that was eminently fair because you were adjusting with your table at the time. But yeah, it's like, let me know how good a long rest you get when it's summer in July, your air is broken and you're trying to sleep and you can't throw enough covers off, right? Like, let me know how you feel the next day at work, right? Yeah, your guy is the same because he's sleeping in armor on the ground, you know? Like, I don't care how heroic you are, you know? I'm not going to sleep well.
Yeah,
I got up a lot to pee that night, you know? Anyway, all right. So it's about that time, though, as we delved into conditions. I think there's probably even more of this. So time for some final thoughts. Let's go over, like, just your final thoughts overall on utilizing conditions, but also the condition you, maybe the condition you like the most, and the one that you haven't, the one you don't like as most, maybe, and maybe the one that you haven't played with that you really want to more so. What do you think? Take those three, play with them how you want.
Okay. I feel like prone is like, respelt knocking you prone is peanut butter and jelly, like right there. And we've seen a million applications of this, like particularly Bonnie uses this constantly. But like, okay, there's this really high armor class opponent and we can't land a solid hit on them and they're on their back and we're pounding on them. It's annoying for the DM, but it gives the players a different chance to hit because you're attacking an advantage that isn't super annoying. They're not helpless. I feel like invisibility got its due. Now you're getting attacked at disadvantage. You're attacking at advantage. Invisibility is actually an awesome power, and I feel like it's represented as it should be. Paralysis for undead and what have you in low level sports are okay, very deadly, but I sure as hell do not miss the energy drain from the previous editions. I also want to thank the listeners for not like burning me alive for saying what I said about the monks back at the first episode, but we've come a long way and here we are. So I mean, all these are tools to help you adjust the difficulty of your game to fit what your players are looking for. So it can be challenging, but I would avoid these gotcha moments. There's times like, and Dave and I, you and I can't, we were in campaigns together where like you had these other NPCs who had these gotcha mechanics and it's like, no, they can't do this. And in one
game, as we made a joke, the most powerful NPC, they couldn't just kill it. They killed a campaign. That was their stunning blow.
Right? Oh yeah. No, our Kang was truly, I see. He was my Skeletor from my first edition game and not the Skeletor who was like, He-Man. No, we just dubbed him that because he was unkillable and so overclocked. It was like you're a first level boxer and my nemesis is a young George Foreman. It was not cool, but you should use those to give the tension and the difficulty to your game that you're looking for, making it fun for everybody.
I think they're really good to add some spice, flavor. Instead of just knocking people's hit points, it's a good way to affect the battlefield, change things, make it a little bit more challenging. In the end, it could be a little bit more fun, though. Players will be careful how many times you stun them because they will start to get kind of things there. As far as the three, one that I really would like to use, slowed, even though it's not truly one listed in here, it's more of like an ancillary variant one. I really that kind of idea where it's reducing your speed. It's reducing your hit points and stuff like that. It's making it difficult for you, but it's not stunned. It's not like you're without agency. I like that it's still, it hurts you, right? Like if somebody casts a slow spell on you, it doesn't, it affects how you're going to do things. It makes it a little bit more difficult, but it doesn't take away the ability to do anything. Likewise, like paralyzed, I find that one to be like, that's like stunned on acid or on like some kind of steroids, right? Is that it's basically stunned, but everything is a crit that hits you, right? And you're, you know, most times you're going to be paralyzed for 1 minute or something like that with a lot of things when it does drop. So that's like a, that's a fun killer, and that's just like the end of things. So that one is even more than a condition. It's like a finality to it. And then the one I don't use a lot, strange enough, Charmed. Like, I don't know the last time I ever cast Charmed Person on anyone. I'm always worried about it at low levels because the I'm worried about failing it, and they're going to know that they were, you know, someone was trying to charm them. And just at higher levels, I guess it never is, it's not really valid as you kind of get up there. The saves kind of get, like, you know, the characters are more wise, I guess, at that level. So those would be my three there.
Two things on what you were just saying, Chris. Charmed, the problem you have with Charmed, because it was something that I used a ton with Roderick and also Gwaden in the Ragnarok campaign, because they're both kind of these, you know, talky, bardy kind of people, even though Gwaden is a Viking wizard. But regardless, right, still same general idea, right? They're not like, you know, heavy hitter, you know, guys. But the charm one, the problem is that it's not helpful in a fight necessarily, because the minute they get hit, the charm is gone. And if you're in a fight, you're going to get hit. So it seems to be a little more of a utility spell as opposed to an offensive spell in that way, right? Yep. And yeah, the half speed thing is excellent, because it's one of the things I did in Dragansalor's lair in your birthday game. You were on the other side of the table against the white dragon, but in that one, all of the area, because it was swampy, because he was a black dragon, was half speed. And you'd be amazed at how that, between that and darkness and things like that, how that changed that encounter. I mean, you guys remember, because the encounter went a while, you guys were able to like get up and have food and have a coffee and sit around and talk while we still finish the damn encounter, you know. But that is surprisingly, when you make difficult terrain in the right circumstance, can be very, very difficult. So my three here, as a player and even as a DM too, being able to utilize invisibility but with a greater invisibility, so you have the condition but you have it as greater, so you're attacking and everything and you're still invisible, is awesome. As a player, I love casting it on like the rogue, like Gwaden will cast it on our rogue, on Jen's character. And yeah, just enjoy constant sneak attacks at advantage. Right. As a DM, I like it because the players go, wait, what the hell is that? You know, when Xantris, the Kingmaker, at the end of Curse of Strahd, one of the lieutenants in essence of the Dark Powers, just disappeared and everyone went, what the fuck is that? That's not cool, you know. So I like that. The one I don't really like, you said it before, Chris, like deafened. It literally, so it reads, a deafened creature can't hear and automatically fails any ability check that requires hearing. I mean, yeah, okay. Can you use that? Sure. I don't, you know, it's just kind of a, I don't know, right? Whatever. And the one I want to play with more, because as I was saying, it started to go horribly wrong in the girls game, is the exhaustion stuff. I think that is definitely something that you can use the dials for, especially when you're turning up the tension and you're trying to reduce their resources. That exhaustion starts to compound in ways that would make cryptocurrency blush, you know. I will finish off just my thing is that conditions in the early levels of play, I think you want to be a little careful with some of them, because that can go really, really bad really, really quickly. It is a great way to instill a lot of fear in players. So, you know, use it like a spice, right? Later in sessions, when the players are more powerful, that's a great time to throw them out, because it changes the battlefield. It changes the tactics they can use, even simple things that you don't think of. Like I said, half speed. You would be amazed that when you have 20th level characters, how much half speed actually affected it, on top of some other things too. But it really changed a, you know, something where you gang up on a dragon and destroy this thing into like a, holy crap, we're in the lair of a dragon type of thing. So enjoy that in the upcoming Dragonlance games, because I learned my lesson very well, guys. So there. Anyway.
Can't wait.
Thank you again for tuning in, everybody. This was not a listener question. This was a DM Chris question. Well, not even a question, just a thought, because he's been building out some crazy homebrewed monsters that you can see in our Forge and Fire articles. But if you do have a question, we are DMs with problems. We love to help with DMs with problems. That's our whole mission here. So you can reach us at 3wisedms.com and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach out to us on email, 3wisedms@gmail.com. You can get us Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We are very active on the socials. We are always up for seeing what's bothering you at your table. And so, I mean, with conditions, there's a lot of saving throws. So you have to roll dice. Maybe have saving throw dice that are special for just saving throws. And it would be great if you got them at Fan Roll Dice. You can go to our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. From there, you can enter the code 3WISEDMS10, the number 10, and you get 10% off your order. Also, super new, as you guys have been seeing on our socials and website, we are invading the dungeon of YouTube, and we are attempting to defeat the algorithm dragon. So we got all our armor polished up and our weapons sharpened, but help us out. Head on over to our YouTube channel. It's 3WISEDMS. We're branded over there. You can find us. We've been uploading everything from our return from episode 111 onwards, and we want to hear from you. What would you like to see on YouTube when we start to delve into the video sphere of it? Because it's kind of an exciting time. So we'd like to hear from you guys. So reach out to us. Let us know. Anyway, that's going to be it. I'm going to stop rambling. As we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you all at home for listening to another episode of 3WISEDMS. If you like what you heard, please give us the 5-star rating in your podcast platform. And if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, this was our question. This is something that we brought to the table, but we often answer listener questions. So if you want to hear us listen, answer one of your questions, please send it in. You can send it to our email address, 3wisedms@gmail.com. You can go to our website, 3wisedms.com, put it in the What's Your Problem field, or talk to us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're active in all those places, and we're always looking for new material for the next podcast. We love helping you solve the problems you have. This is a podcast for Dungeon Masters with Problems. That's what we're really here. And that's it for this week. We'll see you next time, 3WISEDMS.